And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3574 of the Survival Podcast. I decided since everybody enjoyed the blood and guts and fire and brimstone yesterday, why not bring you two of them in a row? Next week, of course, is going to be all rewind shows, all rewind shows where I take an old show, maybe add a new intro and replay it for you, because I have got about 85 people that are going to be on my property for the better part of that week. And the early part of that week, I will be busting ass along with helpers like Nick Ferguson, J.R. Haley, and Nicole Sauce as we get ready for those people to arrive. Then on Tuesday and Wednesday, other staff members start showing up, and Wednesday everybody gets here, and so I just don't have any way that I could possibly do no shows for you next week, so figured why not go out with a bit of a ba-bang, and we are going to have a ba-bang today. We are going to talk today about the fact that all welfare is corporate welfare. So yesterday we talked about the potential for food riots because SNAP benefits are ending, and that's happening right now. Like, that's today. The money's gone, and, like, the payments that are supposed to go out in November ain't going to happen, and we'll see what happens, right? The Democrats are really up against a wall with this. That's not pro-Republican. That's balls and strikes. That's what's going on. CNN released a poll today. I should have saved it so I could brought it up on the screen for you, saying that the Republicans' approval ratings have gone up during the shutdown. I was blown away, and I'm like, the reason I believe it is it paints Republicans in a good light, and it comes from CNN. Like, that's, like, if it came from Fox News, I'd be skeptical. You know, if it came from MSNBC, I probably would have fell over and had a coronary or a stroke or something, but wow. So that's not going too well for them. So anyway, we talked about that, and I made some posts about, hey, I don't give a shit if your SNAP benefits get cut off, and it made a lot of libtards really, really angry. And they started calling me, you know, a lot of names. And, of course, that must mean that I'm a Trumper, whatever the fuck that actually is, and MAGA and whatever. And anybody who listens to this show knows that's retarded. I mean, that is just stupid, but fine. They can do whatever they want. But one thing that kept coming up in it, well, what about corporate welfare? And I immediately responded with the concept of all welfare is corporate welfare. And I made a post. And I said, I dare anybody to challenge. Nobody challenged me. Some people mouth me off, but nobody challenged me. I said, give me any welfare program, and within 60 seconds, I can prove that it's actually corporate welfare in the end. People had something to say about it, but nobody put up an example. Now, that's either because the brain is too tired to think anymore because it's too busy being weighed down by drugs and manipulation and all the other garbage in the food supply and everything. We'll talk about that some today. Or these people are just smart enough to know that they're lying. Because when I get done today, I'm only going to really rip through SNAP. But this, when I get through with SNAP, it's only a small piece of today's show. We're going to look at the larger macro. But when I get down to one program, I'm going to use SNAP because it's on everybody's mind right now. When I'm done with that, you're going to have the pattern set in your mind. And then you'll look at something like Medicaid and go, oh, it's just actually an extension of that. And you'll realize that no matter how much you do believe that the people that are in those programs need help, that help is the last thing they're actually getting. What they're getting is trapped. And the beneficiary, the actual beneficiary of all this fucking money that they've grifted is not the people in the United States. It's not the people that are being paid in these programs. It's the corporations that actually end up with all the money in the end. And it's impossible to argue against it if you understand it. And if you don't understand it, it is actually so simple. The only way you will not understand that is you choose willful ignorance. That is the only way. I'm going a little bit overboard with my audience because my audience is going to be very receptive to this message. But I kind of know I got some press among the libtards this week, and some of them will show up just to be spiteful little fucks, and that's okay. But you're going to have to accept reality. Or, you know, I'll put it this way: if you're from that school of thought, getting the meme from the South Park ski instructor. You're going to have a bad time today. Before we get into having a bad time today for certain people anyway, let's go ahead and take care of our sponsors of the day. And sponsor of the day number one today is Biltong USA. That's, of course, from Anton Van Buren. Anton, you know, I'm going to tell you something about Anton. Anton is a real libertarian, an actual libertarian. He's also a legal immigrant who came here from South Africa, watched South Africa turn into a police state, and said, F that, I'm getting the hell out of here. Came here and started a business. Then COVID came and nearly destroyed his brand new infant business. He realized that one of the things that he knew how to do, and it was part that would fit right into the business he already had that was shippable, was Biltong. And he looked at the market and said, everybody that's on Amazon or whatever say they sell Biltong is full of shit. That ain't Biltong. That's like weird jerky or something. And it's overpriced and it's crap. And he's like, you know what I'm going to do is make it like you can buy a half a pound of actual Biltong for a reasonable price. And his business exploded. And not only did he survive COVID, he thrived during COVID. He is a true American business success story, a true small business that knows his customers. The guy is part of this community, folks. I would say about 8 out of 10 live streams, I see him in our comments section. That tells you something right there. He is a really great dude, and I love hanging out with him. I love having him as a sponsor. And you should try his Biltong, his Drew Wurst, the Biltong sticks, the Calabanazi sausage, all of it, man. Would you, and then check out some of his other offerings. Like, he's got some really amazing stuff that he imports from South Africa, from Mexico. He's got some badass smoked salt and smoked pepper. Those are just, if you like to cook, they're fantastic. Good dude, good product. Check him out today, BiltongUSA.com. Next up today, most likely, I mean, it's hard for me to remember at this point. I would say probably the longest single running sponsor who is still here that never took a break. Because it would be right now between Jeff the Berkey guy and Knife Kits. And Jeff took a break. Knife Kits never took a break. These guys have been continuously sponsoring this show since I think it would be February or March of 2009. That is a loyal spot. In podcasting, imagine that. They must get some value from your guys or they still wouldn't be around though, because they're not doing it because they just like me. Check them out today at knifekits.com, where you can build a knife. They're the company that does what it says and says what it does. You can build a knife from a kit, like a model kit when you were a kid, right? It's not hard. Or you can get raw materials and do your own full-on bladesmithing. It's up to you. Lots of great stuff. Again, been around forever. Great company. Little discount, but does do a discount for MSB as well, so make sure you take advantage of that. That's one of the ways they know that their advertising's working, is when you use the discount code. Anyway, with that, let's get on into this today, and I really do want to come at this from, wow, thank you. Joe says he's been around since the TDI days. Some of you don't know what that means. Ask your friends in the chat if you want to know. All right, so I want you to come with an understanding today of what I'm going to present to you. I am a purist anarcho-libertarian. If I had my way, I would get rid of every single vestige of the state. If there was anything left of a state, it would be a decrepit skeleton. You know, maybe basic defense of borders, you know, and international relations and, you know, what have you. And that would be a stretch for me. I'm also a pragmatist. That ain't happening in my lifetime. That ain't happening in my grandson's lifetime. It ain't probably going to happen in his grandson's lifetime. That is an ideal world in my view. I cannot be an honest man and come to you with a problem and potential solutions if my solutions are such that they can never be implemented. Does that make sense? So I have to say it's the game that we're in. Here's how you play that game. Here's how you win that game. Here's why you're losing that game. And here's things that actually could be done that show how stupid the system is so that you'll understand it, even if those things don't get done. But I'm going to give you some suggestions today. You're like, well, you're very generous with my money, Jack, when I talk about how we would change taxation. I would have zero. If you can't understand that, you should go somewhere else right now, because you're too purist for pragmatism to be presented to you. Just, I have to say that going in. All right. So let's start off with, how can it be that giving money to a poor woman living in a mobile home with three children who's also working part-time at Walmart, who can barely get by at that horrible level, right, giving her $800 a month in SNAP benefits to buy food for herself and her children, how can that be corporate welfare? It doesn't seem like it makes any sense when you say it. And if you're emotional, it doesn't seem to make any sense. But here's an example of a conversation I had with my niece about this. And my niece and her husband, it's really, he's my nephew, so she's my niece-in-law or whatever. You know, they're great people. They're very giving people. They're very compassionate people, but they're also leftist. They don't even vote, but they fall in that mindset. And at their age, you know, they're like 30s, early 40s, it kind of makes sense, right? lot of people in that boat. But they see the flaw. And I was talking to my niece-in-law, right, and she was talking about the budget cuts during the USAID thing, and I'm like, but she's like, but we have to help people. I'm like, yeah, but the way we do it is it doesn't actually do anything. It doesn't work. And we give money to people that we shouldn't give money to, right? And she said, well, yeah. And the way I got her to actually understand, I'm like, they have a relative on her side of the family that always needs money, and they give them some money because they have kids, but they're very careful about how much money they give them, and it still gets abused. And she acknowledged, yeah, you're right. But, so you wouldn't just keep giving them unlimited amounts of money, would you? Right? And you know them, and you're close to it, and you have visibility into it, and it's still flawed. How can you trust a bureaucrat in D.C. to fill that role in any way that makes sense at all for all the money they take from you? Because these guys make a lot of money, too, and they pay a lot in taxes. And she, I can't see how it works. But even that person would still say, but that person, right? It's always that poor. And they'll always find the poster book example. Someone that was basically Mother Teresa on welfare, right? If you hold up, like I'm supposed to have sympathy for this. I don't. And this is because I actually understand how the whole system works. It's not about that individual per se. It's about the totality of the system. And the reality is, in our system, money always flows uphill because it's not real money. If our money was real money instead of debt-backed currency, it could not flow uphill. The inertia would be such that the weight of the money itself would prevent it. But as long as you can print money at will, as long as money is a certificate for debt, money can flow uphill. And this is, here's one of the rules I have to discuss anything about the economic system, money, taxation, anything that revolves around economics. I will not discuss it with a person if I ask them the following question and they cannot give me an answer. Tell me how a United States dollar is created. If the answer is, well, they print it, then I don't talk to you, right? If it's anything other than it's a certificate for debt against a bond issued by the government for the purpose of funding the government, right? That it's loaned into existence. If it's anything other than that, I will not have a conversation with that person about economics. And I'll tell you why. It's like a person that reads a book. And with these people, it's a lot of what it is, book knowledge and no practical application. They read a book about how great calculus is. And they want to tell you how important it is that we teach more people calculus because it's so great and it does all these things. And you say to them, what is 2 + 2? And they don't know. Are you going to have a conversation with that person about calculus? No, because they don't understand the most fundamental basic mathematic, right? The mathematic that we learn in like first freaking grade. They can't do it. So why would you talk to them about calculus or advanced algebra or trigonometry or geometry? Well, you wouldn't if you're a sane person. And you wouldn't even bother to try to educate them about all of those higher level math before you said, we have to at least get you to be able to do like your times tables that they should have taught you in third grade. And your division and your multiplication and addition 1 through 12, right? If you can't do that, we're out because there's no way you can understand this. And so you wouldn't waste time trying to educate them of the higher thing if they refuse to understand a lower thing. So to understand what I'm talking about today, you have to understand money first. And I'm not going to dig into that today. And maybe we should do another show about monetary creation and things like that because we haven't done it in a long time, how it actually works. Most of you that tune in regularly know that at least you would be able to answer the question that I asked, all right? So with that in mind, how can money flow uphill from the poor to the wealthy when we're talking about welfare that goes to the poor? It follows a very simple cycle. Taxes that fund programs. Programs benefit the corporations. Corporations pay out to investors who use leverage from the money that they acquire through their investment to generate cash flow that has no tax on it. That's leveraging an asset that is an appreciating asset with a lower percentage rate of debt than the appreciation rate of the asset. Okay? And then recycle the whole thing all over again. Now, if that seems too simplified, when I go through the SNAP cycle, the food stamp cycle, it's going to make a ton of sense. Just remember the cycle. Taxes, programs, corporations, investors, leverage, recycle. And recycle and repeat. It's like a shampoo bottle. You know, lather, rinse, repeat. Okay. Here's how to, the first thing you have to understand for that to make sense, because this is the one that's the most foreign to people. The rich use debt to buy assets and generate tax-free cash flow. This is a wealth strategy. I don't care if you don't like it. I don't care if you think it's a loophole that needs to be closed. It's not going to be closed because the people you're electing you think are close it benefit from it more than you ever will. They are not going to cut their nose off to spite their face to make you feel better. They're not going to help you. None of them have helped you. You've seen every balance of power. If you're my age, you've seen it all. You've seen split and you've seen unified on both sides of the aisle, House and Senate and presidency, all of it all the way through. Right? I go back to I can remember a president named Ford, and I've seen every mishmash way. And the only thing that has happened is the debt has steadily increased. Okay. And the rich have continued to get richer and the poor have gotten poorer. And what it means to be middle class has been eroded. The first time I coined the phrase downward class migration was 2010. And everything I said that would happen in that video that I did in 2010 has happened exactly the way I said it would. Why am I that smart? No, because it's a pattern. Taxes, programs, corporations, investors, leverage, recycle. Okay? So the rich using debt to buy assets and recycling and generating tax-free cash flow. Let me give you a very simple example of how you would do this. I'm talking rich here. I'm talking people that measure their wealth in at least tens of millions, if not hundreds of billions of dollars, up to billions. You go buy very expensive real estate in some place like Manhattan. Because you have lots of money, you don't even use your own money to buy it. You buy it, you roll some of the money you borrowed from another asset into it as your down payment, so you have instant equity, and you immediately do some things to it with other leveraged debt money to improve it. You make that one piece of your portfolio, you allow it to appreciate in value for a couple of years, you refinance it then and pull money out of it. And Manhattan real estate is going to, well, it might not now, that might be a bad play with what they're about to do up there, but in general, Miami Beach real estate will appreciate faster than the cost of your debt, which means you can do it forever. You can do it forever. There is no tax on money that you are paid in debt. You owe it back. And you just keep recycling this debt cycle. You buy as many assets as you can. So there's always something to leverage to finance the debt against the last asset. And the entire portfolio continues to grow. And you never sell an asset unless you're exchanging it for a better asset. Like a real estate rollover where you sell $1 million building to buy a $10 million building and you still pay no tax on the $900,000 you made in profit on the $1 million building. Okay? This is done with art. It's done with stock portfolios. Not the kind of stock portfolio you have, the kind of stock portfolio these assholes have. This is all done at a corporate level. You need to understand that principle to really grok all the horrible shit that I'm going to show you that we've been doing to people today. That person that has that money coming in, that corporation has that money coming in, will generate money with it forever and increase their asset value at the same time. They'll buy buildings, right? They'll buy networks. They'll buy patents. They'll buy things with their durable appreciating value. That's the only thing they actually buy. If you give a poor person money, the first thing they think is, what can I spend it on? If you give a wealthy person money, they think is, what can I buy with it? Or can I leverage it to buy more of? Not spend, buy. Do you understand the difference? Spend versus buy. When you spend money, at the end of the day, you look and you have nothing. Or maybe you bought a big screen TV, but in 5 years, it's fucking worthless. You have to pay somebody to get rid of it. That's spending. Food, you eat it, it's gone, you spent it, you get nothing except you get to live another day. I know that's important. I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying in the end, you end up with nothing. The rich do not operate this way. And it's not because they're evil, it's because they understand the system and they play to the system instead of rebelling against the system and being destroyed by it. This is why people come to this country from a foreign land with barely enough money to get here. They barely speak English, and in 5 years, they're millionaires. Because they look at it and go, oh, look at the opportunity. That's the way it works here. I'm going to do that. Instead of sitting around throwing a tantrum, sitting in a pool of their own spit, crying about something that they have no control over and never will, in front of a college that their daddy paid for them to go to. that person is way smarter than the supposed that disadvantaged immigrant is way smarter than the college educated Yahoo who thinks they're fighting for right by supporting this system that I'm about to show you is nothing but destruction of everything of value in a country that has led us to what we call the end decay period of empire. That's where we are at. But next, the poor use debt for short-term survival, never ownership. The closest most of the poor, and when I say poor, I'm not necessarily talking about the person who lives in a housing project, though I could be. I'm even talking about the person who owns a house. Most people don't own their home. Their home owns them. Cut their income off for a month, and they're in bad shape. Cut it off for 2 months, and they're in foreclosure. So how is it an asset if it can't generate anything for you? It's just a place to live. Now, there's a lot of ways you can make a home an asset. As you build equity in it, you can leverage it. You can then buy another house, and you can take the existing house, and you can rent it to somebody. So now it generates cash flow. You can generate the cash flow in a way that makes you pay almost no taxes using depreciation against an appreciating asset, and you can get derive the majority of your cash flow from debt to buy another property and pay no tax. That's what they do. The poor do not understand anything I say. Look at it a different way. Everybody wants to buy Broadway when you play Monopoly. The person that wins Monopoly is the person that, as soon as they land on Baltic Avenue, they buy it, mortgage it, use the mortgage against it to put a house on it, and immediately do it again and again. And every single property immediately take out the mortgage value, realizing in this game I don't ever have to pay it back, which was by design by a socialist to show the evils of capitalism. It became an incredibly successful game, made that socialist rich, and showed people how the capitalist system really works and how easy it is to play. But the people that play the game don't learn the lesson. The people that sell the game learn a lesson. Do you understand what I'm telling you here, right? The poor use debt, even in the form of handouts, somebody else's debt, for short-term survival, mainly because they really don't have a choice. I have to eat today, I have to pay the rent, or the Section 31 landlord's going to throw me out. Even though that rent's only $50, I got to use some of my money to pay for that. I got to take care of the kids, I got to put diapers on them, I got to get them to school. I'm not saying that these people are bad. I'm saying that's the position that they've been put into. And no one has bothered to educate anybody in this country about the things I'm telling you today. In fact, the only people who have done so to outside the wealthy class are Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners. Bitcoiners are the ones who have figured this out. And part of that is Michael Saylor kind of spilling the tea on how to leverage Bitcoin for the rest of your life. When I heard him say that, I was very skeptical. First, I looked into the maths. And then I realized, well, this is what they've always done. They just primarily used real estate and art in the past and jewelry and anything that was an appreciating asset that appreciated more rapidly than debt. If you can borrow money for 4% against an asset that appreciates at 10%, you can do it forever as long as you stay conservative in your loan-to-value ratios. And this is what these people have done for 6,000 years. This is as old as banking itself. Now, let's now apply what we've just learned and let's look at the SNAP cycle and see how SNAP, which is supposed to help poor people feed their kids, that's how it's marketed anyway, is actually corporate welfare. Okay, so the biggest player in this space that benefits the most directly from SNAP is Walmart. It's Walmart. So Walmart workers in general will qualify for SNAP. People, when they say they're working poor, that's what they mean. And Walmart will literally figure out, I'm hiring this new person, I'm not going to make them full time. I'm going to give them part-time hours, but they're going to get more in SNAP than giving them another 10 hours of work would do for them. I'm going to avoid benefits, but they're going to get more value from their employment working less, even if they don't explain it that way. People follow incentives and people work this math out. Wait a minute. If I worked another 10 hours, I would make $140, but I get $650 in SNAP, which is not taxable. Okay, that's what I'm going to do then. If the incentive is perverse, the action will be perverse. Walmart literally has people that work at these branches that when a new person gets hired, they sit down with them and explain how SNAP works and say, you probably qualify. If you're not in on it already, let's get your paperwork filled out. And if this employment's going to affect it, let's figure out how it's going to affect it and make sure we file the right paper. We don't want you to lose your government benefits. We care. And the person talking to you is part of that system, and he probably does or she does care. And they really think they're helping you. The corporate mothership knows exactly what it's doing. And this is why 25% of all SNAP funds are spent out of Walmart. Now, Walmart's not the only enemy here. They're just convenient for this exercise, okay? Understand that. There's 75% of the money goes somewhere else. SNAP accounts for about 3.5% of all of Walmart's revenue, and most grocery stores profit about 3.5%. You do with that information as you please. You can look it up if you doubt me. The average profit margin of a grocery store is 1.5% to 4.5%. Okay, let's just keep going here, all right? So then, if you're an employee and you work at Walmart, you get your little tiny piddly Walmart discount, and you are stretched thin, as anybody that's there is probably actually would meet that definition pretty well, and you need to buy food for your kids, and Walmart accepts SNAP, and you work at Walmart, and they give you a discount, and you're already there anyway, where are you going to buy all your shit from? Walmart. See how that works? So even though Betty or Susie or Tommy or Reginald or whoever is getting the SNAP benefit, where does the money end up? Where does it end up? It ends up in Benton, right? It ends up in Walmart's pocket. They're the ones that take that money. They don't waste it. They don't spend it on daily needs. They don't spend it. They buy with it. They buy more assets. They buy their own stock back to raise dividend payouts to themselves. They buy things that they can borrow against to keep growing the overall equity of the corporation. That's what they do. That's what they do. And it's not, I'm not going to say there's nothing wrong with it. It's exactly what you should do if you're a corporation operating in the fiat system that we work in today, because it's the only thing that works. So we gave all these people this money, but the people that actually accumulate the wealth is Walmart. But we're not done yet. What kind of food does the average person on SNAP purchase at Walmart? Do they purchase vegetables and fruits and meats and high-quality nutrient-dense food? Or do they buy Pepsi and Coke and chips and Doritos and ding-dongs and ho-hos, and in the words of a famous singer, fudge rounds? What do they buy? If you've ever been to Walmart, especially about the time that the payouts go out to people on assistance, and you look at the people walking around, you know exactly what they buy. They buy the lowest quality, cheapest garbage food that kids like to eat they can get their hands on. And I'm not faulting them, because most of them don't even understand what they're doing. They're just trying to put as much food into their household as they can to feed their kids. And their nutritional education is dog shit, okay? It's dog shit. So they buy all the junk food, and what does it do? Would you describe the average Walmart shopper as obese or healthy? Average. Obese. We all know that. And you also, even when you walk around Walmart and look at the people shopping, there's a lot of them, maybe they're not really heavily overweight, but you look at them, that person's not well. You know what I'm talking about. They're sick. And they're sick with what? Acute illness or chronic illness? Chronic illness. Right? They're sick with chronic illnesses that are actually not diseases. They're lifestyle illnesses. A disease is you get strep throat. You take an antibiotic, you kill off the bacteria to cause a strep throat, you get better. Okay? That's a disease. Cancer's a disease. It could be caused by some of this shit, but some people that live very healthy lives still get a cancer. It has to be treated, and sometimes you can't defeat it, but you either defeat it or you die. Right? It is an acute illness. You can point to the thing that is the problem and say that one thing is the problem, and if you can fix that, the person is then able to become well. when people have type 2 diabetes, it shouldn't even be called type 2 diabetes. It's a really clever marketing term. It should be called carbohydrate toxicity syndrome, because that's what it is. People that eat too much sugar will get diabetes, as we call it, even though it's really just a lifestyle illness. So what does this cause to happen? What is the second order effect? We already figured out Tommy goes to work for Walmart, gets on SNAP to help feed his kids, goes to work, spends his money at Walmart. The money actually ends up in Walmart's pocket. Now Tommy is sick and his kids are sick. Since he's low income, what does he do next? Well, he probably already did. He applies for Medicaid. Well, that's to help sick poor people, you rotten libertarian anarcho bastard, you Jack. Why would you take that away? Hold on. Let's follow the money. Let's follow the cycle all the way through before we get emotional. All right? So that means that the taxpayers are now paying to medicate the lifestyle condition of Tommy and his family through Medicaid, which drives up the cost of health care for everybody that's paying their own way. Just saying, by the way. And what is the normal response of a doctor when he talks to Tommy and his 13-year-old or 12-year-old or 10-year-old kid is already pudgy and fat? Hey, put him on a diet and stop feeding him this shit, Tommy, and this is not normal. Oh, right. They're now giving freaking GLP-1s to kids. One way or another, it's medication. And it's medication for Tommy, and if Tommy's married, Tommy's wife. It's medication for everybody. Okay, Tommy works at Walmart. Where does he fill his prescription? Come on, do the math. Where does he fill his prescription? Well, why, of course, at the Walmart pharmacy. Why would you have to drive across town to pick up your prescription when you could just do it when you get off your shift or right before you get on? So now Walmart's selling you the drugs, but who's really making the money off the drugs? Pfizer, Merck, Moderna, right? All the drug companies. And all the tests. Once a hospital or a clinic has someone on one of these programs where they know they're going to get paid, anything's going wrong. Put them in a scanner, put a probe in their ass, triple X-ray, contrast MRI, whatever. We know what's wrong. They're eating garbage. But no. We're going to milk the shit out of that. So the device makers, the drug makers, and the medical institution of a whole is now profiting off the Medicaid payments that started because people are eating the garbage they're buying from Walmart because they work from Walmart. Walmart doesn't pay them enough, so we have to pay them SNAP. Because they're on SNAP, they're going to buy the lowest quality bullshit food so they get as much as they can for their money with somebody else's money, which is your money. How's it not corporate welfare? What does Pfizer, what does Bayer, what do all these drug manufacturers, Eli Lilly, said, what do they do with the money? Do they spend it? Or do they invest it and leverage against it for tax-free cash flow? Okay. Now, the drug companies, the medical systems, everybody profits. You think we're helping poor people with Medicaid and SNAP, and we're enriching Pfizer and Walmart. Now, tell me, honest to God, I won't flame you. I'm asking right now. There's over 100 people on the live. Give me a welfare program that you don't think I can do that with. Go. Just put program in all caps so I can keep going, because I know there's a little bit of a time lag, especially for some of you. And if anybody puts it up, I will do this to it, and I will do it in 60 seconds or less and show you the company that's actually profiting for it. You want me to give you one? How about Section 8 housing? The Section 8 landlord is profiting. And what is a Section 8 landlord? What business are they in? Real estate. What's the easiest thing you can leverage? Real estate. Your tenant pays you $50, but the government pays you $900. And your cost on the property is $700. And the property appreciates in value. And you know you can sell it to another investor any day because it's an automatic cash machine whenever you want to upgrade. Give me one. Nate Knapp here says there isn't one. There isn't one. That's the correct answer. I'm waiting for anybody, though. I know there's somebody out there that, like, it's really important to you that we continue this program, and it can't be corporate welfare. Now, let me be clear, okay? I am not saying that this justifies corporate welfare. I'm saying I am opposed to all welfare, because all welfare in our system, the way that it is now, the way it's designed from the macroeconomics of fiat monetary system and a debt-based economy, plus the way the game is being played, plus the programs and the way the government has implemented them, lead to no alternative. I'm not saying we couldn't help people. Even with some, I will give you some government programs that could work, at least a hell of a lot better than this shit does in a bit. But where is the government program of welfare that I can't explain within 1 minute's time how it actually ends up with all the wealth that's paid into it in the hands of a corporate entity? And now you know. And there's a lot of you out there that you kind of intuitively knew this already, but now you're like, fuck, he's right. Like, it's everything. It's everything. Where does the money stop and accumulate? That in any monetary process flow, that is the first question you should answer. The purpose of the spending is X. That doesn't matter. The number you're looking for is the accumulation point. The purpose is X, but the answer is A, the accumulation point. Why do you think the wealthy got so much wealthier during COVID when we literally gave more people more money than any time in our government's history? Think about that. The United States government paid out in assistance and stimulus and, you know, forgivable loans and trillions of dollars. And the worse off you were, the more money they gave you. And most of the people, like 99% of people who benefited from the COVID payouts, you can't think, you go in their house and say, show me one thing you have of lasting value from the money you were given during COVID. They got nothing. They got nothing. They have people who never lost their jobs who got all the money. People that ended up like net positive 10 grand because of like child deductions and stuff like that and other stimulus and things to do with the tax code. 10 grand to the positive. 4 years later, 5 years later, nothing. Nothing. 229 Mix says dollars to Bitcoin. Those are some of the people that have something to show for it, aren't they? They took the money and bought an asset. Top Cone says we paid off two small student loans. That's a good thing, but was the student loan worth it in the first place? Maybe. But in general, federal-backed student loans, where's the money accumulate? Where's the money accumulate? Banks and college endowments. It does not accumulate in the hands of the student, who, by the way, the value of degrees has declined immensely in the last 50 years. A bachelor's degree in 1970 had a lot of value. I don't care what it was in. There was actually some truth to it. It doesn't even matter what you go to school for, go get a degree. You could have a degree in communications or marketing or liberal arts in 1970, and you were marketable in the job market. Today, half the people in freaking Starbucks with nose rings pulling on freaking latte machines have degrees. What's the value? It costs more than ever, and it has less value than ever. It can only exist in the upside-down world of fiat monetary system based on debt with government interference on top of it to make it as bad as it is. Every major welfare dollar ends up in corporate hands. Every dollar the government spends in welfare eventually ends up in the hands of a corporation. So, yeah, I'm opposed to giving a football team tax money to build a stadium with, right? Or making sure General Electric doesn't pay any taxes again in spite of making billions of dollars. So when I say all welfare is corporate welfare, I'm not saying, well, it's okay to have corporate welfare. I'm saying it's all disgusting. And it all only works in the system that we have. This is why the country really is a reflection of the people. You think of the government as having all the money. The government doesn't have jack shit except power, because that's all they actually care about. Their incentive is to grow and maintain power and control. They don't care about money because they have one foot inside the corporate entity too. There's a revolving door, bureaucrat to lobbyist to cabinet position to lobbyist to bureaucrat, a revolving door of that shit. And every politician's tied into sources of money and flow. And if they come in pure as the driven snow, unless they have the backbone of a Massey or a Paul, they will be co-opted. Right? The current Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, is a perfect example of that. He was a man of the people for the people when he first started running for office. A member of this audience was key into getting him elected the first time he was elected into significant office. That man was able to go talk to Marco once a year, every year, until he got his second term in the Senate. And then he got corporate bullshit from the guy. Somewhere along the line, he was bought out. And how do you know that's true? Everybody that Trump appointed, even with a majority in the Senate, was hell to get approved, except for a couple people, one being Rubio. Marco Rubio was approved overnight, instantly, 99-0 vote. One senator wasn't present. You know you're dealing with scum. That's the system that we're in. And the problem we have, though, is those people don't really care about money directly. When you give money to the government doesn't keep it, and they don't do anything with it of real value, except spend it into the economy and allow it to accumulate in the hands of the rich. That's what they do. It pushes straight through. That's what happens. Every dollar ends up floating up because debt is light. The chains of debt are heavy, but the recipient of the debt, it's light on their hands when they have the ability to leverage more and more and more. So this is why we have $37 trillion of debt, and we have nothing to show for it. What can the United States point to and say, your sacrifice, and a majority of that debt is over the last 40 years, not even 50, the vast majority of that debt. I remember being a kid and not hearing the number trillion when debt was talked about. When the national debt was talked about, the word trillion wasn't used. Hundreds of billions was the terms, right? So we went from under $1 trillion in about 40 years, 45 years, to $37 trillion. Sometimes I forget how old I am. It's a nice day when you forget how old you are for a little while, right? $37 trillion. What do we have? Do we have incredible national infrastructure to move stuff and freight around the country? No. Do we have the highest quality rail system in the world? No. Are you kidding me? And I'm not one of these retards like, we need passenger trains to go everywhere. But Americans are not going to do that. We're a big-ass country. We're not that people. But we can move a lot of freight with high-quality rail systems. And some people would use it if it was decent and it actually worked. And it actually went from where people are to where they want to go, instead of where some politician's uncle's former roommate can make a profit off of building a bridge to nowhere. We have nothing. During the end of the Bush administration, they gave out $790 billion in stimulus, and we got nothing. Then Obama came in and immediately did another stimulus spending program, which is just pure spending for everything, and we have nothing to show for it. I can show you a guardrail to keep people from driving off a road into a dam, a small dam, but there's no water in the dam because they never built a dam. That was done with the money under Obama. I know a person who says when Obama put all the money out and they tried to say, like, it's working. Look, America's getting jobs created. They said his company grew by 20 employees because of the stimulus plan. He was in construction. The man has never employed 20 people at one time in his life. And during that period of time, he actually laid off two people. But it says on the form, 20 plus, not 20 total, 20 new employees were created by this guy's construction company because of Obama's bullshit. We got nothing. What do we got? Where's the bridge that's going to last 100 years that we built? Where is the economic development zones that actually are economic development zones that the average small business person can benefit from? There's a few of them. Most of them don't come from government. Most of them are actually businesses do it with the money that they grifted from government. Yeah. And they do it for their own self-interest, which is fine. If we weren't paying the bills, I'd be okay with it, but we are paying the bills. Your grandchildren are having the credit card rung up to pay these bills. That's what's going on. Government mirrors welfare in spending. Consumption, not investment. We have neo-fascism. I said that forever. Trump is a Nazi. He's a fascist. So you're using those two words as though they're the same word, leftards. They're not. Fascism is a system of economics. Nazism was an authoritarian form of government that also was fascist. But fascism is where you have corporations and the state cooperating for the benefit of both. The kind of fascism we have, though, I call it neo-fascism. I've called it that for years. Some of you have heard me talk about it before. All the government does is spend all the money that they can borrow and tax as fast as they can to enrich the corporatocracy. The corporatocracy takes the money and uses it to buy the regulators and control the regulators. It's called regulatory capture. It's why even a Bobby Kennedy can't fix HHS. Because it's so entrenched. That's the actual deep state. The deep state is not some government conspiracy. It's a corporatocracy that controls the apparatus of government that has a monopoly on violence in your life. That's what's going on there. And so we don't have anything to show for it. We can't say, look at all the great things we've built. Look at how wonderful our country is. Look how safe and secure our country is. We have the ability to blow any country to smithereens, but we don't have the ability to keep people out of poverty in our country while every program that's designed to fight poverty has created more poverty and put us deeper in debt. Well, we still don't have anything. The country behaves like the poor. It spends money. It does not acquire assets with the money. Even the freaking Kublai Khan and his prodigy were smarter than this. The Khans were the first people that created a legitimate currency that you could truly call a fiat currency. It was printed on silk. And if you tried to do counterfeiting, you know, you could have been executed in this country for counterfeiting not that long ago. Imagine what Kublai Khan would do to your ass for counterfeiting. No one even really thought about it because the penalty wasn't just death. It was very long, drawn out, painful death. That gave people confidence that when you took the silver note, or I'm sorry, the silk note, it was actually, you could spend it with the Khan. They said you can pay your taxes in it and we'll pay you in it and we'll buy stuff from you with it. And then anytime the economy had a surplus of a durable asset, the government bought it all for pricing controls. I'm going back to Kublai Khan. This is not new. So they would buy it and warehouse it. They would buy silver, gold, pearls, and then durable midterm product like wheat or rice, things like that. Because then that could be used as a form of welfare in the future. So you had this huge value, and the Khans became incredibly wealthy with fiat. But they were smarter than our country because at least they stockpiled assets. We don't have assets. We have overpriced buildings that are designed to enrich the company that built the building or did the remodel, not enrich the people of this country. We're a fucking embarrassment. If you travel to other countries and you look at some of just the government buildings and how long they're going to last, how long they're going to be around, and how beautiful they are, and our architecture's dog shit. That's not my biggest problem. I'm just pointing out that's a symptom of the disease. Like when you have a skin rash, but you also have type 2 diabetes and you're in danger of having renal failure, the skin rash is not the most important thing, but the skin rash is there for the same reason. It's an observable symptom. That's what I'm saying here. There's some things we could do that we could have done, and we could have built with all this money, with all these bailouts, with all this fiat money, that at least you'd be able to say, okay, yeah, we destroyed the economy, because we have. We're at the end of an empire, but the country has bones, right? Good bones, like in a house, right? Like, yeah, it looks like shit, but it's just, you know, it's the carpet needs ripping out, and the drywall needs redoing, but the frame and the foundation are fine. We don't have a frame or a foundation. Here's what we could do. How about energy independence? Or at least more energy independence. I did this. I'm going to look it up right here. It was episode 140 of the Survival Podcast, published February 12, 2009. So we're talking about $790 billion that was spent in stimulus. The show was actually called Dealing with Venomous Snakes, which was really what it was about, but I did a little intro. This is when I was still podcasting from my car. Here's the first bullet point in the show notes. How the new number of $790 billion could buy a 2-kilowatt solar system for every owner-occupied single-family home in America. So I did the math back then at the pricing back then, and it included not buying at scale, at market rate. If you guys come out to your house, test everything, throw 2 kilowatts of solar panel production on your roof, and not do battery backup, because that's extremely expensive, especially at the time. Wire that into a grid-tied system. And we could have done that to every single home occupied by its owner in America in 2008 for that same amount of money. And I said at the time, I'm not saying we should do this. I'm saying whatever we're doing, and this is the shit with the guardrail and the turtle tunnel, and my buddy Sean's business supposedly hiring more people than it ever employed, right? That was where that money went. We have nothing to show for it. Imagine right now, every home that's owner-occupied in this country has 2 kWh of solar on the roof. Does this change the energy calculus as a whole? Not as much as you would think, but what it does is balance the fuck out of the grid. Because you can start moving energy around when you have that much power generation in that many locations. But there's more. If they had done that at the time, they would have driven the cost of solar down because everybody would have been competed for the glut of money. The production of it would have went through the roof. The economy of scale would have kicked in, and the total cost would have went down even more than it has ever since that happened, you know, what, 15 years ago. That's what would have happened. And how many people would have said, well, shit, if you're going to be here to do this, how much is it to do 4? How much is it to do 6? We would have a massive solar powered infrastructure in this country, distributed non-centralized infrastructure, and we would have lost nothing because we gained nothing. We gained nothing. The only stuff they can talk about is like third and fourth order effects of like, well, it gave this person a job and they spent money. That would have happened in the solar industry instead. All those multi-order effects would have still happened, plus we would have had something. I'm still not saying we should have done it. I'm saying we could have done it, and we would have something. And instead, we have a turtle tunnel in fucking Florida for $9 million. I am not making that up. You can look it up. During that stimulus program, they put a turtle tunnel, $9 million turtle tunnel, which is a pipe under a road. I mean, a couple of rednecks could have done the job for about $1,000. And the turtles don't know how to use a tunnel. I'm sorry. That's fucking stupid. Okay? It doesn't work. That's what we got. How about durable manufacturing? We could have built manufacturing capacity in this country with that money or with any of this money. We could have made this country the manufacturing center of the world with that money. We didn't have to give it to companies either. We could have built the infrastructure for it, created a friendly environment for it, and sold it at cost so that it was a net zero cost to the taxpayer. Well, fuck that shit, right? And in return, maybe the country retains some level of connection to the asset, like a royalty fee or something like that. Instead of punishing production, we gave you a building at cost. We gave you favorable terms. 1% of the production of the facility is payable back, not even as a tax, as a royalty on the property that you were given at such great terms. Now you got some. Now you got companies wanting to come to America and build the manufacturer that Trump says he wants to create. That all sounds like a bunch of bullshit at this point. More like trillions of dollars are coming into the country. Where is it? Well, this country said they're going to do $4 trillion or whatever. Where? Where is it? Show me. I don't see it. I'm sorry. I don't, Ars dude. I don't see it. And even where I think there's going to be some, I think he's going to get some of these things done, but the numbers are just grandiose numbers. Like, I came in and they said they were going to do $500 million, and I told them $500 million is pretty good, but you know, $1 billion would be better. So 5 minutes later, they agreed $1 billion they're going to do. Bullshit. Unless we're giving them the fucking money to put back into us, which that could be true. How about education that actually teaches self-reliance? We should have the best educational system on the planet. But if nothing else, you know what we should have done? If college is that important, we could have a basic college education for free in America. And it wouldn't cost much to do it because it would just be an online university, which Trump talked about doing. Where is it, Orange Man? You see, people say, you love Trump. No, I don't. This motherfucker promised when he was running, he was going to create the University of America or some shit like that, he called it. It was going to be an online website. Anybody could set up an account and get a basic four-year degree. Or at least maybe knock out 2 years of your college and then go to university to complete something more advanced. Why don't we do that? We could have done that for a song. That could have been built for a few million dollars. The initial rollout, all in, $100 million, you could have built the best online university on the planet and put enough money in an endowment to run it and operate it in perpetuity. No, fuck that. Let's just tell people that we need to have student loan forgiveness so the guy that's an electrician that kills himself working 90 hours a week can pay off the student loan debt of a retard that works at freaking Starbucks. This is the nonsense. But it all stems from the fact that every dollar they take in the name of helping you actually goes into the hands of a corporation. Every dollar. Every dollar. Eventually, that's where it accumulates. A, the accumulation is at that level every time. And it will never change in the current system. And there's another problem here. This is I hit on this a little yesterday. This is something nobody's talking about. And it is the concept of how absolutely toxic to the human spirit and the human soul comfortable poverty can become. Comfortable poverty. When I was growing up, if you were poor, you had to try harder. And if you didn't try harder, your situation got worse. The system we've created today literally is a trap in that once you're on these programs, if you try too hard, your quality of life actually goes down. There is a spread, okay? So you're living, let's say that with these programs, you're living equivalent to making $60,000 a year. Because so much of what's paid for you would cost you more if you had to buy it for yourself, and none of it's taxable. There's no tax, there's no Social Security matching, there's no expense against it. So this person's living like they make 60. They work at Walmart and they make 25. Okay, if that person wants to get the 45, that's a tough leap for that person. Or they wouldn't be there in the first place. Making 45 grand a year, not hard. But it's a leap for the person making 25 right now at Walmart with two kids living in a trailer. I'll be honest, it is hard, okay? But if that person was making 25 grand, making that leap totally makes sense. Okay, I make the leap, I lose all the benefits. Now I'm making 45 versus 60, and I have to work harder. I got to go another 15 grand up. These are just hypothetical numbers, but they're not far off. I ran them today. I got to make another 15 before I break even. That's going to be even harder, and I might fail. Why would that person risk what they have now? Why would they risk what they have now? And the answer is they wouldn't, not if they're rational. If you have perverse incentives, you get perverse outputs. That's what happens. So that person ends up stuck in that. But there's something else that happens then. It gets handed down to multiple generations. It's just the way that it is. And when a person lives that way for a long time, they become to themselves worthless. They lose the internal spiritual battle that we all face. And I'll say this as a religious person. I think an atheist can understand what I'm talking about if they wanted to. There is an internal battle that we all face. Am I good enough? Am I worth something? Am I of value? Do I bring anything? Am I better? Can I be better tomorrow than I am today? Do I have a future to be excited about? When the answer to those questions is no, 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 and no, it doesn't take long before that person begins to feel that they're not having any worth. And if they've been given these forms of charity, right? Government assistance is charity at the point of a gun to the producer. That's what it is. It only takes about a year or two of receiving that with no self-value, no true self-value. The grandiose bullshit, the $200 eyelashes, all that crap is just compensating for something that's a hole in the heart. And then they become convinced of two things. One, I'll never be anything. And two, I have it coming. Because I'm not worth any. They don't say it that way, but it's what's happening in the psychology of it. Because I'm not worth much more, society owes me this. The fact that I've been given this tells me that I'm due this. What do you end up with? I'll tell you what you end up with. You tell me when you look around if you see the result that I'm going to give you. Young men who are fucking simps. They give the little bit of money they have to fucking OnlyFans girls that run around kissing the ass of women, or egotistical prick males that are high up on the social order that use women like Kleenex. It's pretty much your whole male population there. Now, there's 10-20% that are really good dudes. They're the exceptions. I'm talking about the general here. And what do you get out of women? Materialistic, eternal little girl children who won't grow the fuck up and believe that they're being edgy just by being defiant. And they either get a girl boss job that really has no output, become a simp farmer, or become a sponge. Now, again, I'm not talking about everybody. Tell me, how much of that do we have right now? Honest to God, let go of your emotion. How much of it do you see when you look around? We have adults, male and female, who are basically eternal children. The average dude that's 25-year-old today is a simp. And the average woman is a girl who will never be what society needs women to be in our world to help lead us. Even if they're a girl boss. Because they have a fucking email job. That's what we end up with. That's what we end up with. We end up with runaway, out-of-wedlock pregnancies. We have married people refusing to have children and people that refuse to get married having many children. That's what we end up with. Sounds like you're going through an anti-commie brainwash. I see it. Whatever. I don't know who that person is. And I don't know if they're being sincere or not. Why do commies not want people to invent and possibly be better at putting food on the table? So I think this dude's good. I try not to pay too much attention to this. Gifted Doi, whoever that is, that last name, if I got your last name wrong, whatever, I'm sorry. I am 27 and almost my peers, I see it every day. So I think he's basically saying he sees it all the time. 27 years old, people around me are about 27 years old. That's what I see all the time. It's sad, but this has been done by design. This has been done by design, and I don't necessarily think when the whole system began, and it really did have its genesis in 71, I don't think the people that did it, who, by the way, weren't boomers, get over that shit, the people that did it are dead. They were silence, and they were freaking GI generation. Those were the people in power, and it was even a small group of them that did it. I don't think they did it so, like Mr. Burns, excellent, we're going to do this, and by, you know, in 2025, when I'm long dead, this is what will be, oh, that's so, be like, I'm going to go to my deathbed thinking about it. No, but I think once it was put in place, everybody just worked the incentives, and the incentives were perverse, and then the game became kick the can and let the next group of people deal with it, and we're running out of road to kick the can down because we stopped building fucking roads. That's where we're at today. So what about, how can we do smarter safety nets and smarter taxation with me being the pragmatist that I promised to be today versus the anarchist that says, fuck it, burn it all down? Okay. Number one, basic food distribution replaces SNAP and anything like it. What do I mean? I mean, my grandmother used to get government food assistance. Okay. And she got government food assistance not because, oh, she just needed it. She got it because my grandfather was disabled in World War II, managed to put his life together enough to still work for a while, went into the coal mines, survived a mine collapse, and ended up with black lung. Then worked himself nearly into the ground as a carpenter when he couldn't coal mine anymore until he was choking up half his lungs and had to retire early. Now, did they get a SNAP card? No, they didn't have that shit back then. Once a month, she went down to a food distribution center. She got the government cheese. Yep. The big, giant, like, triple-sized block of Velveeta, basically. And powdered milk and powdered eggs and stuff like that. And then she used that to feed her family. Three boys with a disabled husband who worked his body into literally into the ground. I mean, the man was broken. He had lumps of coal embedded in his arm into the bone. Right. So this is not a freeloader. Okay. This is somebody that actually needed some help to get by. My grandmother would go down there, get that block of cheese, cut it in half, bring it home, buy cheap flour and potatoes, and make enough pierogies with that to fill half a chest freezer and feed the family for, you know, if they ate it every day, it would have been for a month. So they had pierogies for 6 months because they didn't eat pierogies every day. And they're eating carbs and lower quality food, but it was all homemade food. It had value. People loved it. Man, I'm telling you, if one of my friends came over, did your grandmother make any of those pierogies? I'm telling you, that's how it was. That's how it was. And this is the funny thing. For all of the anti-carb stuff today, nobody was fat. People ate plenty, but they didn't need high fructose corn syrup and seed oils and all the garbage, and there was no bliss point fully figured out yet with the bag of potato chips and shit like that. That was just beginning. Why can't we do that again? Why don't we stop giving people the food that makes them sick, give them just enough in staples to get by, and remove the artificial ceiling that prevents them from bettering their lives? Because that's what we've done. We've created a system where once you're in that system, the worst thing you can do is rise up out of it. You destroy yourself. You end up working twice as hard to get half as much. That's not by design. Come on, folks. All right. So one, we could do basic food distribution instead of SNAP. Rice, beans, cheese, powdered milk, powdered eggs, bottle of Flintstones vitamins to fill in the nutrient gap. One bottle of vitamins for everybody in your family for this month. Get the fuck out of here. But Jack, that's not enough. I don't care if it's enough. I care if it's sufficient to keep people alive until they figure out what to do with themselves. And we would cut the cost of that program to the bone that way. And we would remove the perverse incentive that keeps people in what's supposed to be a safety net, turns it into a hammock that you live in for the rest of your life. If you actually mean what you say, I want to help poor people. The way you help poor people is by empowering them to no longer be poor. Not by making them comfortable in their poverty. How about instead of having all these forms of welfare, we create a program for guaranteed entry-level work? What do I mean by that? There's garbage everywhere. Pick shit up on the side of the road. I ain't doing that. Then fucking starve. Live on your cheese and your pierogies you make, because that's what you get. I don't have a job. Here's a job. There's a ton of shit we could be doing. As bad as FDR was, the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps, probably one of the best things any president's ever done in this country, even though he was a socialist. He was a Democrat. He was a fucking socialist, okay? He loved freaking Stalin, by the way. Loved him. But he did that. I'll give the guy credit for what was good. I went to places, walked down concrete stairs and fished in things in Arkansas built by the CCC. And I did that in, 2012. And that shit was built in like 1937. It's still here. I can point to it and say, we spent the taxpayers' money on this. It's not the greatest thing known to man, but 100 years later, damn near, it's still here and it's still useful. Some of the erosion work that was done in the day. There is so much we could do to fix this fucking country. People don't want to work. Fuck them then. Then you don't work. You don't get any money. You want to work. Here's work. Here's work. Let's stop all the shit from going into the Mississippi River. How much would that increase the value of this country? There's work for 10 years there. I don't care if they spend fiat debt on it. At least we'll have something to show for it. We'll clean up the dead zone in the freaking Gulf of Mexico. That's actual environmentalism, you retards. Not taxing. The air you breathe out, that's not environmentalism. Stopping the nutrient flow that's creating a dead zone the size of fucking Delaware every year, that would be environmentalism, and it's not even hard to do. I know how to do it, and I'm a redneck hippie duck farmer. I know the guy to oversee it. He lives in Australia. He's got the whole plan already. Yeah, the Gulf of America, right? Yeah. I don't care what you call it. It's still a dead zone the size of the state of Delaware, which is way bigger than you think it is. Okay, it's a tiny state. If you've ever driven the whole Delmarva Peninsula, you know that's a myth. If all you did is come out of Maryland and go into Pennsylvania, yeah, it seems really tiny. We could do that, right? We would need to have, to do this right, something that sort of kind of happened for a brief moment in time under Bill Clinton. hard time limits. Nobody should be able to be on one of these programs for life. There should be a hard limit on government assistance so that the next person who needs a hand up instead of a hand out has the ability to access the program with more limited funds. And I'm telling you, Dorothy and I have talked about doing this at a private level without even thinking about it this way. So one thing we've thought about is the fact that we have a lot of veterans that have some real issues. And what they need is a reboot, time to be around other veterans, and then they don't need to stay in this kind of stall mode for the rest of their life. They eventually need to get like real jobs and go back to living. And I've talked to her about the few months that I spent on the Appalachian Trail when I got out of the Army and how beneficial that was and how it would have been way more beneficial if I'd actually had some people around me because I kind of did it solo. And what we came up with is one thing we thought of doing, we're probably not going to, but we thought of doing is building some small tiny houses on our property and then basically renting them super cheap as a nonprofit to veterans that need time to recover, letting them teaching them skills and things like that, helping them find jobs, giving them that super cheap place to live, and having more than one at any one time. So, because veterans in the same mode support each other. And you know what we said, though? That person lives in that house for 6 months, and they know when they come in, that's what they got. And then there's certain metrics, like we expect you to be going to job interviews. If you need counseling, we expect you to be going to counseling, whatever it is. Like, there has to be a cutoff. Because the next person needs the space. And let's say we had five of these things. Well, that means we can help five people at one time. So we can put five people into a hammock for the rest of their lives, right? Or we can help five people every 6 months move up in life. Which one is more benevolent? Which one is more charitable? Let's see, across 5 years, 12 years, 60 people, or across 5 years, five people. Which one does more good? Even if a few of the people, when you throw them out at 6 months, just go back to being homeless on the street like they were before you brought them in. I don't care. If five of them do, I've still helped 50 more people than I could have in 5 years, let alone 50 years. When you can drill something down to the small, you can scale it to the large. If it doesn't work in the small, it doesn't work in the large. The problem with the government is since they have an unending checkbook, there's no check on that reality. So the harm that they can do is unlimited. That's how we end up with 42 million people in the most wealthy country that's ever existed on food stamps. It's a sin. I'm not putting the people down. They're victims of the system. But we have to change the system. I would say with a taxation in a loan, this would be the biggest change we could make. And it's the only way that the rich will ever pay their fair share, whatever the fuck that is to you, right? We have to move to a consumption tax. If we're going to have a tax, it should be a straight consumption tax. It should be the same for everybody. It's regressive and the poor people feel it harder. No. You said you wanted the rich to pay their fair share. Well, here's the reality of that, Skippy. If we took every billionaire in America and somehow extracted every dollar that they have and every bit of value that they have, ignoring the fact that would completely crash the economy because most of it's held in like equity and Amazon and Walmart and whatever, right? So they had to extract all this. So who's going to buy it, right? But if we could, by some magic, boom, all of Elon Musk's money, all of Jeff Bezos' money, right? All of Jamie Dimon's money, all of, what's his name? Berkshire Hathaway, that guy, can't think of his name right now. All of his money, right? Every billion, Warren Buffett, that's what I was thinking of, Michael Saylor, every billionaire you can come up with, we took all their money, everybody worth more than $1 billion net, Donald Trump's money, everybody, nobody gets a pass, all the billionaires' money, we put it in one coffer. Do you know how long it would run the United States federal government? Take a guess. Like, they said, okay, we're going to take all this money, somehow we didn't destroy the economy doing it, nobody's going to pay any federal taxes for as long as it lasts. How long would we go not paying Social Security, federal income tax, FICA few to all of it? How long would we go? Does anybody know the answer to this? It's fucking a crazy answer. 6 months. 6 months. There is no way to tax the wealthy to a point that you can fund all this shit. It cannot be done. However, we could make it a more equitable system. And we could close all the loopholes that will never be closed under an income tax system. The key is it's income-based. so I can create cash flow without creating income. I've explained to you already how to do that today. And there's 1,000 more strategies to do it with. Plus, I can pay for a lot of things inside the business that I don't have to pay for now. And if I'm creative about how to do that, there's no real tax footprint from it. And it's completely legal. It's not cheating to follow the rules. That's another thing. That's one way they fuck your head. The rich cheat on their taxes. No, they fucking don't. Right? That would be like saying that they gave you a test and they said the test was open book. And the kid next to you brought his book and you knew that you could and you didn't. And he gets an A and you get a C and you say he cheated. He didn't cheat. He followed the rules and he did better than you. That's what these people do. They follow the rules and they're better than you from an economic standpoint, right? And they continue to get better because they never sell their assets. But what do they do with the fucking money that they generate as tax-free cash flow? They spend it. So tax spending. There's your rich paying their fair share. The rich guy goes out and buys a $1 billion yacht. That's $1 million worth of freaking taxes. Or that'll be $100 million in taxes on a 10% consumption tax. He'll still buy the yacht. He's still going to buy the yacht. He's still going to play the rest of this game, but he'll pay his fair share. And this is where the purist out there says, but yeah, you're supposed to be a libertarian anarchist and you're supposed to be a, I already said that. I'm a pragmatist. I said I'm going to work within the framework that's here of what could be done to make the system better. This means if you spend $100,000 a year, you're going to pay $10,000 in federal taxes. That's what it means. Most people that spend $100,000 a year already pay more than that. And this also means if you're on government assistance and you go spend the money, you're going to still pay taxes on money you were getting tax-free. When everybody pays the same, to me, that's a definition of fair. But rich people can afford more. But rich people will pay more under a system of a fixed rate. See how simple that is? And I'm talking one time, end of sale, not a value-added tax like they have in Europe, where it's like they tax it here and there, and then a reseller taxes it, and the distributor taxes it, and the final retailer. Yeah, like, no. No, I mean very simple. The last person that buys the thing pays a consumption tax on it. Because what do we tax right now? We tax production and property. We should not be taxing property or production. That's punishing success. When you punish success, you get less success. When you reward success, once you earn it, it's yours to keep until you spend it, you get more success. Do you want to feel good or do you want good results? Right? Do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? Because some of these people want to be right even when they're wrong, and they want to be right so much they're unwilling to change their position so they can be right, and they're going to be miserable and wrong. It's your choice. It's your choice. What can you do, though? Because none of this is going to happen. Not anytime soon, anyway. Well, first of all, do what the rich do. Buy and own assets. Buy things. Stop spending money. Keep a spending journal for a month. Like I always advise, like so many different types of topics I always say a spending journal, right? Keep a spending journal and ask yourself at the end of the month, what did I buy and what did I spend? If you, right at the end of the month, don't have something in your hand that's useful, that will still be useful a couple months later and will remain useful long term, you didn't buy anything. You spent. You purchased a short-term experience, whether it was a meal out, whether it was a gadget that you're not actually going to use, right? Whether it was a trip to the movies or food from the grocery store, you spent it. I'm not even saying you're wrong. You got to eat. And I'm not for not having fun in your life. I'm just saying it's money that's spent. It's gone. You've worked hard. You accumulated energy in the form of wealth. You distributed energy and you got nothing long-term lasting for it, with the exception of food, because it prolongs your life and it's necessary. But in the end, most spending isn't actually high-quality food. So just like figuring out, am I spending it or am I buying something with it? And if I'm buying something with it, what is the long-term value of the thing? And does the value of the thing increase over time or decline? Or does, if even if it's like a declining value, does it enable me to make more money? That's a leverage point. That's okay too. That's how rich people think. So start thinking like a rich person. You might become one. Stay out of consumer debt. A lot of people think my position on debt has changed. It really hasn't. When I started, I had a pretty small audience. We were not the most financially astute people that I was talking to. So I just said, no debt. Because it made it simple. It's like when you tell somebody that gets into keeping reptiles, do not ever put two snakes in the same vivarium. You absolutely can, but it requires explanation, and it's just easier to tell the new person, just don't do it. They'll just be better off with it, because they're going to make a fucking mistake, and one of their fucking animals is going to eat the other one or something, right? Or they're going to transmit a disease because they didn't quarantine it. Like, there's a lot of things you have to do when you do that. That's how I feel about debt. That's like a snake. You don't know what you're doing. You're going to get bit. But consumer debt is a zero. What is consumer debt? Consumer debt is when you borrow money to buy a depreciating asset or something that isn't an asset at all. When you put a transmission in your car with debt, that's consumer debt. You might be in a position where you have to. That's why we do economic training here, so that you don't end up in that position. But then that has to be paid as quickly as possible. And the only reason you do it is because you need the car to get to work so you can make more money. And you need to be always looking for forward momentum in your life. Like I said about jobs, if the job isn't going to teach you anything or let you earn more money, get a new fucking job. Don't quit the job until you have the new job, but go look for a job, because you're never more employable than when you're already employed. You walk in and you interview with me, and back when I was hiring people, and I go, well, what are you doing right now? Well, I left the job 6 months ago. Well, why? Usually you'd finally get out of them if they were let go. Sometimes it wasn't they did anything wrong. They're just laid off. They're still there tainted. And I'm also like, I got you now. If I want to hire you, I know you're over a barrel. You walk in and I go, so what are you doing now? Oh, I work over at this company. This is a competitor of yours. Oh, your stock price went up. So you need to be always looking to move up. And if you can't move up where you are, move over and move often. That is a progression plan. If you're not progressing in your life, you're stagnant and life will pass you. Life moves whether you do or not. It's not a sliding scale. Okay? Build local trade and networks. Basically, here, I'm not just talking about parallel networks or whatever, some bullshit. Somebody's going to convince you that all of a sudden you're going to buy all your food from your neighbor or something. It's not going to happen. This is really more about good old-fashioned networking and entrepreneurship. You should have multiple ways that you're making money beyond. Like, the people I know that are, like, real blue-collar millionaires, a lot of them are guys like, the guy starts out young, goes to work for a company. Like, I did this when I was a kid in high school. One of my part-time jobs or something, I worked for a while for a Splenda. And he goes out and does tree trimming. Learns the trade so he doesn't kill himself and starts his own business and starts advertising online. I do tree work. Anybody can do it. There's no, you know, I'm sure in some retarded states like California, you need a degree in forestry, the destruction or something to do that job and a permit or whatever. There's a lot of places you just go into that business. Texas, if you want to go, you just go into that business. So they start doing tree trimming and removals and stuff. And they say, wait a minute. I throw all this shit in a wood chipper and then I take it down and I pay to get rid of it? No. So they start doing a small materials business. When somebody like me sees them cutting a tree and goes, hey, you can dump your wood chips there. They go, that truck has about 10 yards of wood chips in it when it's full. How about the next time it's full, I come dump it for you, $20 cash. I'm like, okay, because it's $200 worth of wood chips if I had to buy them. It's 10% of cost. He has to get rid of them anyway. Okay, and he looks and goes, I got like two ricks of wood here. And also he starts selling firewood. Delivered for one price, come get it for another price. The two of the things that were now waste products are now income products. Of course, he invests some of his money, so he has a place to keep all his equipment. He's got a decent piece of land to stack his firewood and all. And he drives by, and this is a real person. This guy's name is Bobby, by the way, right? Big old Texas redneck. Drives by a couple car lots once in a while. He says, wait a minute, people are selling cars. Hey! Sets up a little car lot at his place, has 5-6 used cars parked there at any one time, has no money in the cars. Just basically puts the word out. If you got a car, you can park it here, put a for sale sign on it. And since it's on a state highway and you're driving by it, more people will see it. Somebody might buy it. If they don't buy it, you're out nothing. Advertise it, do whatever you want. But if it sells off of here, I get $100 a car. Cash. I don't care what you sold it for. I don't care how you got paid. You pay me cash. And it just keeps going from there. And I know a guy by the time he was 40 years old, was a multimillionaire. That was his actual path. That was his actual path. He ended up he put a shop building in. He bought welding equipment. He started building trailers. The way I met him is back when I was doing outside plant construction. We had these giant trailers, and you'd buy a Vermeer or a Ditchwitch machine, these big, heavy directional boring machines. And the trailers were ridiculously expensive. He started building trailers that were better than what you got from the manufacturer. You still had to buy your directional boring machine or your Viplow or whatever, but you bought the trailers from him. Ended up with four people pretty much nonstop building trailers and doing other metal fabrication work. All started one pickup truck and some equipment and doing tree treading. He started doing that when he was about 28 years old. By the time he was 40, he was a multimillionaire. That's as blue collar as it fucking gets. That's what I'm talking about, folks, when I say local trade and networks. I'm not talking about trading your comfrey salve to somebody for some onions. Nothing wrong with that. But you're not going to become a millionaire doing it. Right? The guy just said here, Gardens for Life, Jack just comes up with multiple business ideas in minutes. In this case, I didn't have to come up with those. This is what the guy actually did. This is a real story. This is a real person. I haven't seen this guy in maybe 15 years, but I'm sure he's doing fine unless he died or something. He's younger than me. I hope he's still around. I guess he was a little older than me, now that I think about it that way. Yeah, he's probably in his late 60s now. I hope Bobby's still good. Now, you also need to avoid any state reliance systems. If you can benefit from a state program, sure, but you have to look at it like the found money that it is. You cannot get stuck, right? So, we've done shows about how if you have a farm and you want to put in a high tunnel, you can get a grant from NRCS and defer half of the cost. Your person from NRCS will come look at what you did when you first did it and sign off on it, and then supposedly will come back, once or twice over the next 4 years. And after you've had it for 4 years, you do what you want with it. You don't have to do the things they say, the few limited restrictions they put on it anymore. That's utilizing a system. That's not becoming entwined in it. If you're a corn farmer and take the corn subsidy and you do corn bean rotation, when it's time to do beans, you're doing beans. You can't get crop insurance without it. You can't get your subsidies without it. You get typecast into it and you're fucked. You should have never got yourself in that position in the first place. Getting out of it is difficult but doable. But you'd be so much better off with a civil pasture-based system raising beef or lamb. And if I was going to go in business right now raising an animal, I would raise sheep and produce lamb. Because you can self-process easily. People can self-process easily. Anybody that can butcher a deer can butcher a lamb. That's what I would be doing if it was me. But you do what you want. But if you get into the subsidy racket, you're stuck with it. Now, if you have an exit strategy, I'm going to take this land, I'm going to use this grown loan and these grants to pay for the land, and after 5 years, I'm going to sell it and roll it in. That's the billionaire strategy, right? Even if you're not a billionaire. That's different than being entwined in it, where you're stuck with it. You can't get out of it. It's like being an ant in an antlion funnel. Every time you think you're going to get over the ridge, the antlion spits dirt at you. Eventually, you go down in the hole, and the freaking ant gets eaten by the antlion. If you don't know what I'm talking about with an antlion, we used to call them doodle bugs when we were kids. And we were little pricks. We used to go catch ants and throw them in the hole to watch it happen. But just look up antlion on Google. You'll see what I'm talking about and see the trap that they make. That's what a government subsidy trap or a government welfare program is. You have to get out of it, even though it's hard to do, or you'll never be more than you are now. It is designed to work like quicksand. You're totally fine if you don't struggle. You won't sink. You'll float in the mud for the rest of your life, but is that how you want to live? You have to make that decision for yourself. And then what I want to sum up everything with today is one thing Gen Z gets right, and this has become a leading meme from Gen Z lately, no one is coming to save us. Now, they are so self-centered, they mean them. They think everybody else, including you millennials, are just fine. We're all fucking boomers to them. If you are over 40, as far as Gen Z is concerned, they have 20, 25, you are a boomer. Okay, boomer, right? Even though millennials, you guys invented it. You forgot about us Gen Xers in the middle, right? the Gen Z babies picked it up, and you're a fucking boomer too now as far as they're concerned if you're an older millennial. Okay? When I say no one is coming to save us, I mean any of us. Nobody's coming to fix this. We're a dying, rotted empire at the end of its cycle. That's what the United States is today. Before you even try to fucking fix your problems, you try to understand all this, you try to understand why what I'm telling you today, while uncomfortable, is true, you must accept this country has run its course. And the day we went full fiat in 71, the end was inevitable. And the fact that it's made it 50 years is actually amazing. As irresponsible and illogical as we behave, the fact we got this far is amazing. But every other nation that's ever followed this path has ended up in the same place and always in the same way. And it doesn't matter what the system of government was, fascist, socialist, feudal, colonial, Romanesque, the Roman Republic, it always ends up in the same place. And the key thing that will tell you whether that nation will end up here is, does the nation at some point grow large and powerful enough that it seeks to govern beyond its own borders? There's two commonalities in all nations that become empires and destroy themselves. Actually, three. They try to govern beyond their own borders. They eventually end up on some sort of fiat monetary system, and they feed their people with annual crops. Those three things are cancer to a nation. If you feed your people with annual crops, you have to destroy topsoil to do it. We're getting to the point where we can find ways to not do that. It's very difficult, and it's much easier to do it with ruminants in the system. But every nation that became an empire, fed its people with annual crops and collapsed, became fiat dependent and collapsed. Every single one. And every single one of them, before they did those two things to the point of self-destruction, first attempted to govern beyond their borders. And what I mean by govern beyond your borders isn't, hey, France, if you invade us, we'll fuck you up. That's not governing beyond your borders, right? That's not, and that's kind of where we ended up at one point, right? Or, hey, Britain, we kicked you out once, we'll do it again, right? That's not governing beyond your borders. You come here, you fuck with us, or you fuck with our shipping or anything like that, we'll fuck you up. That's defense. My ship's on its way over here. You don't like it, so you interfere with my ship. I will fuck your world up. That's okay. I'm okay with that. That's FAFO right there, okay? I think you should do these things, so I am going to apply pressure, whether economically or militarily, with soft or hard power, to force you to do that. That's when you become empire. The minute you step outside of your borders, and it's not even like, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go over here, and we're going to invade France and take it the fuck over and call America Junior. That's wrong. We shouldn't do it. But eventually, you're basically expanding your border. Empires tend to only expand to a certain point. Monroe Doctrine, right? They expand to a certain point. They realize that guy, this is kind of it. Direct control, this is about as big as they want to be. So then they start using vassals to control other people, other places in the world. And effectively, you have the United States government performing the functions of government in Tunisia. This is not a moral thing to do. This is not a responsible thing to do. And this is not long-term a winning strategy, because every nation that ever did it ended up right where we are now. And then all you have to do is look what happened next. They crumbled. They became a shell of what they were. At one time, France was an empire. What's it today? Just fucking around in a few countries in Africa. Nobody really cares. Britain was an empire. Freaking the Dutch were an empire. It's all crumbled. Soviet Union was an empire. How's that working out? Rome was an empire. The Mongols were an empire. The Greeks were an empire. Every one of them did those three things. Governed beyond their borders. Ended up on some form of a fiat monetary system. Fed their people with annual crops. and tried to convince people that it was healthy to eat animal food instead of animals as food. Every one of them. Find me one that didn't match that. Find me an empire that didn't do those things. Find me an empire that endured. It's never endured. It can't endure because it doesn't work. Right? Turkey, the Ottoman Empire. Yep. And what is Turkey today? Pain in the ass of NATO, who's like, why did we do this? Why did we make them part of our shit? Like, they're not an empire. Is anybody like, hey, you know, we'll piss the Turks off, man, because, yeah. And if you're like, well, yeah, Turkey's got a military, and they have what we give them. But it's not what I mean. I mean, if you live in Japan, or if you live in, I don't know, the Philippines, and Turkey's pissed at you, you're like, whatever, get effed. I don't care. The United States is pissed at you. You have a problem. We actually have the swag, the ability, the power to interfere with your life. So does China. China's the rising empire as our sun is setting. And so is Russia to a degree, but they're in decline too. And mainly for Russia, it's a birth rate issue. Same problem we have, by the way. There's no simple solution here. What I hope you take away from today is this. We need to change our personal thinking more than we need to change any policy. You can become incredibly wealthy in this country while it eradicates itself, while it completely goes into a reboot cycle, while it falls from grace, while the empire, you can still become wealthy as fuck. Or you can cry, whine, piss, and moan. It's up to you. It's up to you. But the biggest thing you need to be doing is finding joy in your life. Figuring out what it is you really want. Most people don't know. They just know they don't want what they have, but they haven't even determined what it is that they don't want. Sit down, make a list of all the things you don't want in your life, figure out the corollary, what do they want, and start asking yourself, how can I get that? Everything in your life will get better. Though it might be kind of like chemotherapy that works. Right? The chemo that does work, that actually cures the cancer. You might feel like absolute dog shit during the recovery. It's more like getting off heroin or getting off meth. When you first quit, you will not like it. It will get worse before it gets better, but it's the only path to a better life. And that's what we teach here. How to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. And here's an interesting thing. El Salvador seems to be doing well. You know what El Salvador is not doing? It's not worrying what any other country does or says other than to say, fuck off. We don't care what you say or do. El Salvador is worried about one thing right now. El Salvador. Bukele is El Salvador for El Salvadorans. El Salvador first. You want to go to El Salvador? It's actually pretty easy to do if you're not a douchebag. If you want to go live in El Salvador, you can really easily. There's a visa program and all, like a long-term, become a national and El Salvador national. There's a program for that. It's kind of expensive. But if you just want to go there, as long as you're willing to leave like once every 6 months and then come back, you can live there pretty much in perpetuity. You can go buy land. You can, if you're not a douchebag. And if you follow their rules and their laws, and there are some differences from us, but that's El Salvador's way. And El Salvador's not telling Mexico what to do. It's not telling the United States what to do other than to go F ourselves whenever we complain about what they're doing. It's not telling Russia what to do. It's not telling Italy what to do. It's not telling the UK what to do. The only thing it says to any country outside its borders is, fuck you. We have our own way. We're doing things our way. We don't care about you. Go away. That's it. You want to run a country? That's how you run a country. America for Americans and America first. We'll help other countries when we fix our own shit. Imagine if we did that. We're not gonna. So you have to form your own kind of micro nations, your own virtual nations, your own businesses, your own business networks. That's what you do. That's what you do. You have to go full anarchist on a personal level and minarchist on a pragmatic level. I don't trust you, I don't like you, I don't support you, but I'll use this because it works for my advantage. I'll be as productive as I can, and I'll keep as much as I can of what I produce. And if you don't like it, I don't care. You have to be like El Salvador. but you needed to get fucked. El Salvador was about El Salvador. Jack Spirico worries about the Spirico family first. First. Doesn't mean we don't care. Most of these people shrieking, you're greedy. You won't help people there. I probably give more money than many of those motherfuckers make a year in charity, actual real charity by choice. They think charity is stealing your money and giving it to somebody else. You cannot be generous with somebody else's money. You can only be generous, actually meeting the meaning of the word generous, when you give from your own. That's it. All right, guys. So my question for you is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to go hell-bent on, look, I don't care if the ship goes down. I'm building a lifeboat, and I'm going to start selling tickets on it. Are you going to go down with the ship, shrieking and screaming, picking one side of the political tribe? By the way, arguing with your, like, Thanksgiving's coming up. People are going to cuss out their relatives over politicians that wouldn't piss on either one of them if they were on fire. That's how stupid that they've made the country. Bonhoeffer could not even imagine the stupidity, and he lived through the buildup of Nazi Germany. Anyway, with that, I am going to wrap up. I appreciate you guys tuning in today. I want to remind you that one of the ways you can support us is doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. I don't believe in spending money. I believe in investing it. And when you buy something that actually improves your life long term, and I bought this product a year ago, I still use it all the time. Hamilton Beach 3-in-1 electric egg cooker. I produce my own eggs, and I put them in here, and I make perfect omelets, and I make perfect hard-boiled eggs or medium-boiled eggs or soft-boiled, whatever I feel like making that day. I personally am doing most of this with duck eggs, but I did this because I love deviled eggs. I absolutely love deviled eggs, and you know what I don't like doing? Peeling a fucking egg and having it get all messed up. When you cook an egg in this thing, it just works. It works perfectly. The damn thing peels like taking a letter out of an envelope. It just works. And I love it. It's $25. It's a good investment. I recommend you check it out. It is today's item of the day. And even if you already have something that does this, maybe you have one. I've sold thousands of these. You know, if you haven't checked out my recipe on there for avocado bacon, deviled eggs, you should check that out because it'll make your life just a little bit better to eat something that damn good. Also, remember, if you like what you heard from me today about life philosophy, I've put all of my life philosophy up to a certain point anyway into a book called Laws of Life by Jack Spirico. That is available on Amazon. Ditch the System, Design Your Life with the Laws of Life book. And consider becoming an MSB member. If you join the MSB, you'll get a bunch of discounts. I was told the other day by the liberal idiots on X, you beg for money every day. I don't beg for money. I offer things of value. And when people choose to buy those things of value, I profit from it. That's actual anarcho-capitalism. To listen to somebody call that begging who claims they are an anarchist is freaking deliciously ironic. It really is. And that's what I did with my members program, my MSB. It is not PBS and you get a coffee mug for $50 a year. It is enough discounts that if you're buying the things that we got you discounts on, you will make a profit. I believe that the best way to become wealthy is to help as many other people as possible. With that, I hope that the show has been helpful to you today and over the years. I will catch you tomorrow with a great interview. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way. Let me show you a better way.